Man, you know, 2020 and 2019 have been big years for cults in the modern media landscape. But we were diving into this stuff back in, what, 2014?
Oh, yeah.
Way before the cult renaissance that we're in the midst of right now.
Well, at least, yeah, it, like Ben said, in the spotlight before Nexium was a big deal. I hesitate to say the S word, but that was around and we were talking about it too. You're going to find a lot of stuff that you didn't know in this episode and stuff that they, these particular cults, probably don't want you to know.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's why we call this classic episode Cults You've Never Heard Of. You'll hear versions of us navigating the difference between a cult and a religion and some of the strangest cults in history, along with secret cults of what was the modern day.
From UFOs to ghosts and government cover-ups, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know.
Welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
And I'm Ben.
And this is Stuff They Don't Want You to Know, as though you didn't hear that in the title earlier, but that's okay. We just want to make sure you know where you are, because, you know, it gets tough sometimes. People get confused. Where am I? What am I? Yeah. What is this place?
Where are we going in life?
I know. It's confusing, right? There are a lot of questions.
And people, there's no shortage of people pretending to answer those questions, some of whom even believe it. And it's funny that we're talking about this. Let's jump right in. One of the great differences between human beings and other animals is that human beings, unique among all highly intelligent animals, seem to have this compulsion to find out more about life, to ask what happens when we die. Now, we have seen evidence, of course, that higher order animals are able to acknowledge death in some form if a member of their peer group dies.
Sure, you'll see elephants that mourn their dead. There have been instances of dolphins that carry their dead babies for long distances in the water.
Yeah, and I think that's an excellent point because it shows it's not just primates. It's also cetaceans. We also know that many mammals have some sort of understanding of that loss. Dogs famously can have difficulties when a human that they have bonded with has passed away. But according to current science, there's one thing that only humans can do. Dolphins can't do it. Elephants, dogs, even crows, which are scary smart. And that is contemplate an afterlife, a entirely abstract world, whether dystopian or utopian, that exists beyond the mortal plane. And that is why one of humanity's greatest either discoveries or inventions, depending on how you look at it, is the idea of religion, right?
Yeah, and we haven't officially, as humans, nailed down what exactly happens yet. At least we haven't scientifically proven what happens.
No.
So any idea, if it strikes personally with you, could be persuasive enough for you to believe it.
Yeah, and we mean literally any idea, because in the absence of universally agreed quantitative, not qualitative, proof of a life after death, people's opinions can be just up for anything. Who knows? No one can really disprove a lot of this stuff. But we also know that for a great deal of human history, these beliefs, which we will call religions for most of this podcast, these beliefs, spiritual beliefs, religious beliefs, guided the course of human civilization.
Yeah, sure. Why would humans come together and live as a society if there wasn't some kind of agreed upon reason to be doing so, other than procreation and the gathering of food? It seems as though we've been getting a lot of people commenting on our videos, especially the one we made about how to start a cult, about how society as a whole possibly was, or quite frankly, most likely was, kind of the or originated as some kind of cult.
Sure. A hunting party later begins to accrete spiritual beliefs, and that could even have happened before Homo sapiens. This is a scary thing for some people, especially if you consider yourself more of an atheist or on the atheist side of the spiritual mm-hmm. spectrum. We know that early non-Homo sapiens, early man, like the demo recording of man, basically, had before the full album came out, already had some beliefs like venerating the dead, performing some sort of ritualistic burial or commemoration. Now, because that stuff happens before the dawn of recorded history, we don't really know how to find the specifics of whatever their spiritual sure. beliefs were. We've got a lot of smart people making a lot of smart guesses. And the reason that we're talking now about this ancient history and the fundamental importance and unique ability that we call spiritual exploration, it's all because you and I recently did a series on cults.
We did.
And we found so much stuff. It got kind of dark too, right?
It got really dark. Editing together that the Kurum case episode was a harrowing experience, to say the least.
And you did a fantastic job on that episode too. If there's anybody who happens to have not seen that, I think the title of it is Child Impersonation or Cults, Child Impersonation in the Czech Republic.
That's it.
And it is entirely about a very strange cult, sometimes called the Ants. And the way that we like to do this stuff in these audio podcasts so far is we like to be able to give a little bit more background and context that we weren't able to originally in the video, just because of the length of time or because of the tone. So in this podcast, what you and I are going to explore is the nature of cults. What makes something a cult? How is a cult any different from a religion? And some great points that listeners brought up in the YouTube comments. Is it possible for things that are not spiritual on the surface to also be cults, which I think is a great question. So if you don't mind, Matt, I've got a little bit of a definition.
All right, let's do it.
All right. So we know that the concept of a cult, at least in academia, dates back to about 1932. A sociologist named Howard P. Becker said that, but he based it as sort of an expansion of an earlier guy's work, a guy named Ernst Troeltsch.
Yes.
I don't know if I made it out of that one alive. T-R-O-E-L-T-S-C-H. Troeltsch. And Troeltsch had this typology where he was trying to separate church versus sect. And Becker originally said that a cult was a small religious group lacking organization and emphasizing the private nature of personal beliefs. Now, we know that is not the modern definition of a cult. The modern definition of a cult is it exists outside of a predominant religion, right? And it has some notable differences in comparison to what we call a religion proper. Now, we know that there are these other things called sects. Mm-hmm. And I said that so I don't accidentally say, you know, sex. But S-E-C-T-S, these are the products of religious disagreements. So they still have many of the same beliefs and structures.
They diverge in the particulars. They've had a schism right. at some point because of maybe something. What are some of the examples of that?
Great one would be Martin Luther saying that people could correspond directly with the divine rather than going through an intermediary, like a member of the Catholic Church. Another earlier example would be when Christianity began and people who traditionally followed Judaism said that they believed that Jesus Christ was a divine, a messenger of the divine. So this became, in a way, it still carried a lot of the traditional beliefs, at least for a time, associated with the earlier belief system. But a cult can take some of that and does something totally new.
Oh, yeah. Or it'll be based upon, at least a lot of the ones that we found were, are based on some kind of writing, some kind of document that kind of, that they take in as their manifesto of sorts, as their kind, their brick and mortar structure for what, how they're going to base their beliefs upon. And then they kind of make some changes here and there, but, it's pretty fascinating stuff. The Holy Grail movement was really, was interesting. The one that was, that we talked about in that Kerm case episode, where it's about the Holy Grail. The entire thing is based upon this guy's book from, I think, 1977, around that time.
The German guy, right?
The German fellow. Forget his name, but if you get a chance, search the Grail movement. It's very interesting.
Yeah, and that's a good illustration of how I would say that the Grail movement doesn't seem to be as much of a cult, but I don't have too much information about it.
Oh, sure. Sorry. I don't mean to.
Yeah, more of a sect. And I think that's what you're saying, because the ants in that Kerm case episode are the cult that broke off. And as we know, and as, thank God you pointed out in the video, the Grail movement is not related. Disowned them completely, successfully sued, a Czech newspaper, right? By the way, for implying that they were supporting it. All right. We also know that, from everything you guys are hearing us say, the exact definition or difference between a cult and a religion is a matter of great debate. You will run into people who tell you that the Baptist Church is a cult. You will meet people who assure you that Mormonism is a cult. You know what I mean? And all our Scientology based listeners or Scientology focused listeners will want to hear us talk about the idea of whether Scientology is a religion, a cult, or none of the above, which it has been all three, depending on who you ask. But we have a little quick guide that we found from a cult hotline and clinic that'll help us differentiate a little bit, right?
Yeah, sure. Why don't you tell us what a cult is, and then I will say what a religion, or at least from this list.
Oh, okay. So like what a cult would do versus what a religion would do. Okay. Let's start with your end. That's a great idea. You start with the religion and we'll provide the cult alternative.
Okay. When you're getting information from a religion, it's generally offered up, right up front. It's given to you as, hey, read about this. Let us know if you're interested.
And when you're in a cult or cult-like organization, there's deceit in recruitment. So we're not giving you either all of the information or the actual truth.
In a religion, generally freedom of thought is offered up, and members have a say in what goes on a lot of times.
Not in a cult. We are totalitarian. My way or the highway to hell.
Generally, religions will promote a family unit of some sort. Usually it will have very rigid structures of what that family unit can or cannot be, but they still promote a family unit.
Destroy the family unit in your cult. The only unit is the cult.
Great.
I'm getting a little dramatic. Sorry. I'm had a lot of coffee.
Religions tend to work within a society, so they'll go out and do work inside a community, do some volunteering or donation.
Okay, cool. So, like, you could have your own life in larger society.
Yeah.
In a religion. Not in a cult. Isolate the members. No outsiders. One of us.
A religion is generally open to the community, so it will take anyone who comes in who is interested. And it just has open arms, let's say.
Right. Which is why, for instance, at least in the United States, you can generally, as long as you are respectful of the traditions, you can generally attend any, church, mosque, synagogue, Christian reading room or what have you, a Hindu or Buddhist temple, as long as you're not a jerk about it, but not in cults. You gotta keep those non-believers out till they've been carefully vetted.
Yeah, because they might gum up the works.
They might gum up the works.
A religion is interested in promoting potential. Now, what does that mean, Ben, if it's promoting potential? So it wants you to grow individually.
Ah, yes.
And because it wants to see the entire religion grow, but it also wants to see the community grow.
Well, you know, that's really taking away from the development of the cult, which is the primary focus of a cult. And that's why a cult will limit the development of an individual. Destroy the ego, as they would say.
So in a religion, while there are guidelines, members are not systematically controlled. They're not individually controlled.
Okay. So, certain days might be meatless, or certain holidays have requirements you need to participate in, but you are allowed to have a mind of your own.
Yes.
Not a cult where mind control techniques are prevalent and and practiced often.
In religion, it's generally promoted that you should really think hard about your decision to take a commitment in this religion, to be saved or blessed in some way, or take a rite of passage in this religion. They really want you to contemplate it, think about it, make sure it's the right decision for you.
Oh, right. Like how quite a few religions require you to have a certain period of study before you can, if you convert to a religion. Not in cults, man. That's the good news. Commitment is encouraged during the recruitment process. So you want to learn more? Come on, just join. Join and we'll tell you.
Just give us one more payment and then you can learn a little bit more and you'll be committed. Okay, now this one I'm have a little bit of contention with.
Oh, yeah?
But on our list it says that in a religion, people are free to speak out against the tenets of a religion. And I mean, that's true.
To a point.
To a point. But if you're inside the religion, you may have some more problems there, which might lead to, say, a schism and an offshoot and perhaps a cult.
Yes. And in a cult, any criticism is often met with, very serious threats. So these could be legal action. These could be, isolation even further from your new cult family, physical punishments even. It can be very messy very quickly.
I have another point of contention here in this list, but that's okay.
Yeah.
In a religion, clergy are expected generally to be responsible for their words and actions.
That sounds nice. That's like a theoretically.
Yeah, it sounds very nice. As we have seen with certain massive institutions, that may or may not be true.
Ha, right. And in a cult, the leader and the followers consider the leader to be above reproach, cannot be criticized. So what are some great examples of this? Well, we know that Manson or Jim Jones would never have been criticized by a member of their cult. We know that for a time, Kim Jong-il was not legally not be able to be criticized. There's a weird argument here, which is different. I'm not saying that North Korea is a cult country, any more than I'm saying that Thailand is a cult country, but there's a monarchical fallacy here, because in Middle Eastern countries and in Thailand, any sort of criticism of the royal family, can get you in prison very quickly. Jeez. At the very least. So that's kind of cultish, which goes to another thing. Questioning the leader or the basic outline of the cult is never allowed. So if you say, hey guys, even if it's something as small as, hey guys, I really like our 8-hour brainwashing sessions, but I was thinking maybe we could use a CD instead of a VHS tape so we don't have to keep stopping to rewind it. Then you would get in a lot of trouble.
It would seem so.
Yeah. So now that we know some of the differences between a cult and a religion, we'll talk a little bit about some of the history, which I think is fascinating here. Something from the Baltimore Sun, that we mentioned a little bit before is that, something can change from a cult to a religion over time, right?
Oh yeah. And it can splinter the opposite way as well. So early Christianity, when it was first originating, it was considered a cult because you had certain groups of people, like you said, who were from, who were Jewish or Roman at the time. who then started following this one guy and this one guy's message. And, you know, it's an interesting comparison. I'd like to, I haven't read much up on this, but I'd like to see someone's argument for Jesus as a cult leader. I'd be fascinated to read that. If you looked, and I'm not saying that he was.
Right. But
just, it would be an interesting angle to look at it.
Because they have a theology that did a couple of things. They said this current status quo is not the way that humans are supposed to be. So it's kind of heretical, and it confuses some of the earlier religions. The Jewish religion and the Roman religion at the time were some of the predominant belief structures. And while borrowing heavily from a lot of those, from Roman society, from Jewish tradition, Christianity itself was something that was novel. And of course, Islam was also considered a cult by medieval Christians much later, who would have never called their religion a cult, but the new guy on the street was the same thing. And it's because some of the same stuff, you know, Islam has Jesus as the most quoted prophet in the Quran, and there's so much commonality in the Abrahamic religions, but still they called it a cult. So this leads to an interesting idea. What if the only real difference between a cult and a religion is the length of time that a spiritual organization is active?
I think that's a great point. That's an absolutely great point, because as soon as a new guy comes along, that's weird and different. That's a cult.
And there's a great argument here that we broke down from this article in The Sun. And, there are a couple reasons why this is kind of a good metric, or I don't know. What do you think is a fair amount of time to transition?
Well, it needs to be one where a child can grow up inside this belief structure.
Okay.
Long enough to be old enough, as old at least as the parent was.
And reproduce successfully.
And then continue, right? So, yeah.
Okay.
That person would have to, reproduction would be necessary. You can't just bring people in.
So like three generations total, maybe.
Yeah, that would be about right. So, what's that, 100 years or a little less, a little more?
A little more, maybe, yeah. Well, I guess it depends on when they have kids, right?
Yeah.
When they die.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's very smart. And it has to function a couple of ways, because already there will be people asking us or writing emails asking, well, what about a cult that functions in secret for hundreds of years? That's a little bit different. We're talking about things that function in the open. So one of the biggest points is a group that has survived over generations cannot have the sort of self-destructive or antisocial behavior that occurs in cults.
At least not openly.
Right. You can't kill your breeding population. You can't render them, sterile one way or the other.
You also can't kill a lot of them in a mass suicide.
Right. Yeah. No mass suicide. Also, it has to play nice with whomever the current government or state is. So that means that you can't, break laws like abuse laws, which is one way that, groups are, who later turn out to be cults, are often caught, you know, and it could be some dark stuff. It could be domestic abuse. It could be, fraud, you know, making your followers give up their financial assets to you. Or of course, in some cases, it can be sexual abuse.
That's a great point about functioning inside the society and not making the rulers of the land you occupy angry at you. So, and I think that has a lot to do with morality and why religion and religious beliefs, the morality of a people is often ascribed to that.
Ah, that's such a good point. Yeah, it's such a good point, because one thing that it seems religions tend to do is over time have a morality which is sort of a mirror of the society in which they operate, or is tolerated by that society.
Sure.
So, so a cult that argues something like people who are not in our religion are not really human, then that is not going to, that morality is not going to jibe with the authorities. They'll always be under suspicion. Mm-hmm. But if you have a moral argument, which is something like people should try to be good, which is when you boil it down, that's one of the most basic tenets of any sort of spiritual belief structure. And for thousands of years, people have just been fighting over the definitions of good and people.
Yep.
And, it's sad to say, I hope that if aliens land, they're not just disgusted with us on that point, but,
yeah, pretty sure they will be, but that's all right.
But then another thing they can, to the point about kids, these cults or excuse me, religions will also grow institutions. So they'll have, non-profit organizations. They'll take care of the sick and the elderly and the dispossessed.
Yeah. And they'll have systems, to educate others.
Yeah.
To basically bring people up in these beliefs. Mm-hmm. So that, again, that's the thing we were talking about earlier. You can't let it die. So you have to make sure the young people get the message and then continue forward.
And this sounds like a recipe for something that's not just able to survive in a community where not everyone has that religion, but it sounds like people of this religion or obeying these kind of approaches could become really valuable to the larger society.
Sure.
You know, what are we talking? We're talking about stable, generation spanning, self-sustaining organization that wants to help people.
Sounds like a great thing.
Sounds like a great thing. And sometimes in history it has been. Of course, part of being one of the guiding principles of human history means that there is a lot of stuff on both the pro and the con side. Millions of people have been saved by various religions, and millions upon millions have been murdered. No other way around it.
Yeah.
All right. But it's time now to talk about some cults. We've talked about the difference between cults and religions, and now it's time to talk about cults. But before we do, it's time for a word from our sponsor, right?
Oh, yeah. I always forget that we have these great sponsors. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for helping us make this show, guys.
Yeah, we really appreciate it. Are you tired of going from Walmart to Target and back looking for the perfect robes?
It's hard to find a coat of sufficient length to really give you the gravitas that you're looking for when you're on that stage or pulpit talking to your flock.
And the secular, soulless husk of uninitiated flesh that are currently running the world economy into the ground don't understand the value of a good sigil, talisman, or crucifix. But never fear, because there's finally an answer for cult leaders just like you. That's right, Buck Thunder Tumble's Worldwide Robe and Sigil Emporium. Come on down to find the latest innovations in mind-cleansing crystals, in past life regression technology, and mind control. Are your followers seeming a little bit too ornery? Are those pesky egos resurfacing at the strangest times? Well, then why not try the mind muzzle? Fresh here at Buck Thunder Tumble's Emporium.
Those blood rituals can get really messy. Sometimes when it splashes up on your robe and you get stains, your flock will notice. Well, bring your soiled robes and talismans and sigils and anything else that may have a little blood stain on it. Come on down to Buck Thunder Tumble's Robe and Sigil Emporium, and we'll wash all of those blood stains out. We'll also wash out any other nasty stains on your brilliant robes of magnificence.
We accept payment in cash, cards, children, religious icons, other robes, rival cult leaders, and, of course, human hair.
Buck Thunder Tumble's Robe and Sigil Emporium is not legally responsible for any of the following: Waco-style massacres, cult indoctrination, resurfacing of egos, robe chafing, sandal chafing, sigil poison, blood poison, roll eye, wiggle arm, snake handle, echolalia, ululation, breakdancing, spontaneous disco, rites of passage, teeth filing, double winks, triple winks, goat speak, dark miracles. Paid for by friends of Buck Thunder Tumble's Robe and Sigil Emporium, a division of Illumination Global Limited.
All right, well, that was, that was interesting.
Yeah, I can't pick our sponsors, I guess. We should also say, I don't know if they put it in the ad, but I think if you mention us, you get like an 8% discount.
Yeah. 8%, 7% if it's a Tuesday. It was something weird.
Yeah.
I don't remember the specifics.
They have a different calendar. So now it's time to talk about some out-and-out cults, things that are universally called cults by everybody except for the people in there.
All right. Well, let's get started. This is one that we found that's it's a little weird. Let's just go into it. It's called the Creativity Movement, formerly the World Church of the Creator.
Ooh.
Now, this is a white separatist organization, and it advocates the whites' only religion, creativity.
Wait. The name of this racist religion is creativity?
Yes.
That is like the most uncreative name.
but it's also so universal.
Okay, yeah.
Although it's not at all universal. It's whites only. So it was also kind of a descriptive phrase that was used by this guy named Ben Clausen. I think that's how you say it.
It's like one of the leaders, I guess.
Yes. And it included all adherents of the religion. And basically the use of the term creator doesn't refer to any kind of deity.
Oh, okay. So there's no God.
No, it's to you. It's to the person, the self and white people. Let's just say. But anyway, despite the former use of the word of church in its name, the movement is definitely atheistic. There is no belief in God.
Huh. Okay. Now, this is the one that started in 1973, but the founder, Ben Clausen, died, right, in 1993. Okay.
So he only had 20 years there to run the thing.
And it's so strange to me then. We're going to find, of course, that racism is prevalent in a lot of fringe cults. A racist organization doesn't necessarily consider itself also a spiritual organization, but a lot of spiritual groups have no problem with racism and in fact feel very justified about it. And, sadly, although people might like to think this is a newer kind of belief that's more and more in the fringes, it's been around since religions. Racism and religion have been thick as thieves for a lot of human history. I want to talk about one that I really like, the Prince Philip movement or a cargo cult.
Now,
this is something that Chuck from Stuff You Should Know and I are both fascinated by. I don't want to say we're big fans of it. So this is an island called Tana in Vanuatu. And this Vanuatu is, aside from being something that I'll mispronounce regularly, this is a small island nation. And during the, sometime probably in the 50s or 60s, having received airdrops from planes that were flying over, the islanders who were rural began what was called a cargo cult. So they believe, at least this one tribe on Tana believes, that Prince Philip is a divine creature.
You mean the Duke of Edinburgh?
Yes, the Duke of Edinburgh, and is the son of a son and brother. So it's incestuous, which is okay if you're a deity. The son and brother of the legendary John Frum. Now, I think, have we talked about cargo cults on the show before?
We've mentioned it a couple of times. We did the Sentinel Island episode.
That's right, yeah. So you can learn some amazing stuff about this. The royal couple didn't help at all because in 1974 they visited the island, which I just think is elitist and kind of not cool. I guess you could say it's diplomacy, but I think it's tremendously condescending on the part of the Duke of Edinburgh. But I think maybe his intentions are good because when he found out about this religion, he's visited and exchanged gifts with the leaders. Now, this cargo, when it was originally dropped, not to go too far into the story, was amazing. And after learning of learning more about John Frum and the West, the mystical understanding these people had, which was often exploited or presented with ridicule, resulted in them building a fake airport, essentially fake airway, and calling for the return of John Frum for the cargo to bring more of these amazing gifts, which if you think about it, had to be like space age, may as well be magic. Oh, yeah. They hadn't seen them before. But that is a story for another day.
So there's something called Nuwabianism, and this is something that you pointed out to me that I had never heard of.
Yeah.
This is an umbrella term that refers to these doctrines and teachings of this guy named Dwight York, and it originated as a Black Muslim group. In, I think it was in New York, right? In the 1970s.
Yeah. Thereabouts.
But eventually, I'm kind of skipping ahead of here, but eventually I found out that they had a headquarters in Georgia.
Yeah. Putnam County, right?
Yeah. Really interesting, where there was a pyramid structure, and it's really fascinating. You can search for Nuwabian. Is that just what you would search for? Nuwabianism?
Yeah.
And you can find a picture. It's really interesting.
Yeah, and it's based on a bunch of different things that Dwight York encountered in his time, like Freemasonry, Shriners, revisionist Christianity, of course, Islam, a couple of other things that would probably be called cults, some ancient astronaut conspiracy theories, and this pretty much was centered just on Dwight York, by far this leader, alpha male of this group.
They had some interesting beliefs, didn't they?
Oh yeah, we've got a list here. Let's go back and forth.
Okay. Number one, it is important to bury the afterbirth so that Satan does not use it to make a duplicate of the recently born child.
Big problem in Putnam, I think. Number two, some aborted fetuses survive their abortions to live in the sewers where they would be gathered and organized to take over the world.
People were once perfectly symmetrical and ambidextrous. But then a meteorite struck Earth and tilted its axis, causing handedness and shifting the heart off-center in the chest.
Here's one of my favorites, Matt. Each of us has seven clones living in different parts of the world.
Well, obviously.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't even know if you're Matt Prime or Matt
Tersh.
Yeah.
Women have existed for many generations before they invented men through genetic manipulation.
Thanks, guys. I mean, women... and then there's the idea that Homo sapiens, modern man, is a result of cloning experiments done on Mars using Homo erectus.
That's crazy. You know what's crazier?
What's crazier?
Nikola Tesla came from Venus.
Is that crazy?
No, I could see that.
For everybody listening, Matt just did a mic drop. another one is that the Illuminati have nurtured a child who is the son of Satan, born on the 6th of June in 1966 at the Dakota House on 72nd Street in New York, born to Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis and the Rothschild Kennedy families. The Pope was there. He performed necromantic ceremonies. The child was raised by Nixon, lives in Europe now. It's
wow.
You gotta check out Dwight York to see some of the legal trouble the guy's been in. And he's got numerous sexual abuse charges amongst other charges of fraud. There is an argument that people have had, which is, you know, was he just accused of this to prevent his movement from becoming self-sustaining or a threat to a status quo?
What if that last story is true? Just going from my invisible's mind, imagining some of the more crazy things. But what if that story right there is true and it's so ridiculous that no one would ever believe it? And that one guy knew and he wanted to spread the word.
I would be surprised, because there would be a lot more focused and effective ways to spread the word about that. But you know what? Maybe we don't know. Maybe the Antichrist really is alive right now, hooked to a computer called the Beast 3M.
Oh, that would be terrible and wonderful, just knowing that it was true.
Yeah. But here's our question. Now, of course, since York's incarceration, quite a few of his followers fell by the wayside. He still does have a few. And these followers maintain some of his writings and some of his recordings. And of course, with the stuff we're saying, you know, when we just read that list, we're treating it in a lighthearted manner. But let's keep in mind that a lot of established, quote unquote, established religions, which have been around for more than a century, have beliefs that might sound equally strange when you just list them the way that we did.
Yeah, so, I'm sorry. I must apologize for the way I did that list, but
Whatever. I don't even know if this is you or if this is one of your seven clones.
Tersh, dude.
Tersh. Sorry. Tersh.
Or tertiary.
Well, tertiary, if I can just call you three, we've reached the point where usually in our podcast, we talk about, where to go to learn more. I have a little bit of a twist on this if you're into it.
Yeah, I'm totally into it.
Let's talk about how to get somebody help if they're in a cult, because we know that this can be a heartbreaking thing, you know, especially so a lot of people find themselves in a situation where maybe their child is just old enough to be their own legal guardian, but young enough or isolated enough that they fall into a clearly unsafe situation, like a cult. So we found a couple of things from some cult helplines that we can advise you with. One of the first things that if you're talking to a loved member who is in a cult, be careful not to straight up criticize the group or the member, because remember that if it's a cult, they're going to try to tear down this person's ego, which means that they have no privacy. They will have to say what you said about the cult or the leader, and then this will likely be used. If the leader knows anything what's going on, this will likely be used as a reason to cut you off from their life.
Yeah.
Which makes it much harder.
And you have to keep in mind that this group is purposefully trying to isolate this person, your loved one. So you have to remember to initiate communication as much as you possibly can with them. But you have to be really, really careful not to be judgmental when you're talking to this person.
Yeah. Socratic method.
Yes. You can't, because that will send them directly in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm. Oh, another one that's pretty important here. Just some housekeeping, which applies to any organization, in my opinion. Don't give original documents to anyone. No original birth certificates, no original copies of wills or anything like that. And please, God, no titles, no deeds to any physical possession. It will not be yours for long.
Do not, under any circumstances, allow yourself to be persuaded by, quote, professionals to spend lots of money on some kind of treatment or some kind of legal action until you've verified the credentials of that person, not only, but also the qualifications that they have for handling this problem.
Right. Yeah. Because there's something where it verges into con territory where someone says, well, you have this problem that I can solve for you because of my vast knowledge, just like that doctor who may or may not have existed in the Kurum case. Next, don't feel guilty. Don't feel alone. This kind of stuff is distressingly common, and it can happen to anybody's family. It doesn't mean that your family is bad if one of your family members is suckered in by a cult.
Yeah, it is very important to remember that there are probably a lot of other people going through a very similar situation,
right?
And there are people you can talk to. There's, there is a cult hotline and a cult help clinic.
Mm-hmm.
There's all kinds of family support groups that meet, monthly usually, or sometimes even more frequently.
Yeah. And you can find some help, likely in an area relatively near to you. The internet is your friend in this regard, especially if you're in like an isolated community, which some people might be. Get online, call a helpline. If there's a situation where you feel trapped and you think that you are in a cult, then you can call, you legally can call 911 and say that you are being held against your will. It is a crime to hold somebody against their will, without, you know, legal steps taken to do so. So unless they have power of attorney over you, you know, which again, you should never agree to, then your best bet, although it can be very difficult, is to go outside of this group. If there is somebody who's exploiting you in a cult, or exploiting one of your loved ones, then they're not going to give up, which means that you should research the group, figure out everything about what happens so you can know what's going on with this person in your life. And then we go to the most important thing to remember, right, Matt?
Yeah. Do not give up. Remember that this person, your loved one, is probably a product of either your upbringing or your friendship. And it's really hard to break those bonds. Even if the group has attempted to break those bonds, There is something there that remains, and you have some sway over this person that you love, who probably loves you back. So
yeah,
just, you know, if you really believe that it's a scary, dangerous situation, do not give up.
And let me add something else here, Matt, that I think you and I have neglected to mention earlier. It's very important. Just because, let's say you have a child or a friend or a sibling or a parent or whatever who believes in something that you don't agree with, just because they believe in that does not necessarily mean they're in a cult. So you have to be very, very careful to look at the organization as well before you decide that something's a cult. Because I think it's deceptively easy. It's a bit of a slippery slope to start with, well, I don't like it, so let me find things to dislike. You know, just like the old Louis C.K. bit where he says, you know, if you don't like something, if you don't like a person, then everything they do makes them seem like a jerk, you know? Like, look at that asshole.
Yeah.
Eating ice cream.
Louis C.K., man. Best insights on the planet right now.
Yeah, he'd probably be a pretty good cult deprogrammer, which we didn't even talk about, because sometimes it turns out that's a scam. But I think, Matt, now is the time for us to finally do some listener mail, right?
Oh, yes, and we've got a great one. This comes from Kellison D., and just I want to say here, Kellison says that we can talk about or quote any part of this email in the email, so we're good.
Hey,
here.
Kellison, thanks for writing in.
Kelson says, I didn't check the date on the video, so I don't know if I'm too late, but at the end of your cult video, which I loved, you asked about what underground bases you should cover in future videos. I was raised Mormon, and that's why I loved the cult video so much. Interesting. The Mormons have, not secretly by any means, an underground vault that supposedly holds the largest genealogy library in the world. I've never been to it, but I'm told that tours are offered, maybe they still are, and that it's bomb-proof. And they have to take you in a golf cart a mile deep into the earth, granite more specifically, and the Mormons' material of choice for... the granite is the Mormons' material of choice for all edifices. I don't know if there's anything fishy here, but it's certainly weird. What do you think, Ben?
You know, it is true that the Church of Latter-day Saints is a world leader in genealogy and recordings as far as the specific information about the underground facility. I know it's there. I wish I knew more. I would love to check it out. And it's very interesting to read this email. What I think we should do is start looking into this in some more detail. I mean,
it's fascinating. I think it's a great idea, actually. If I had the funds to put anything deep underground in granite that I thought were special, I'd do that.
Yeah, you put genealogy records?
I'd put everything down there.
You would be like an underground bunker hoarder?
Oh, yeah, dude. Anything I thought was important for humanity that wasn't perishable, going in my granite bunker.
All right. Well, we'll build it one brick at a time. Matt.
So, one more thing. I want to say thanks again to Kellison for writing in and letting us read your email.
Yeah, man. Thank you so much. And for everybody else who's wondering, hey, how can I get a shout out on the podcast? Which, did Kellison ask for that?
Kellison didn't ask for a shout out, but guess what? She got one.
You got one?
Oh, I don't know. Kellison, I'm really sorry. I don't know.
Kellison will write in to correct us. But that was a fantastic piece of listener mail. We do appreciate your time writing in. You can also talk to us. We're lousy all over the internet. You can find us on Facebook. You can find us on Twitter. We're Conspiracy Stuff at both of those.
And that's the end of this classic episode. If you have any thoughts or questions about this episode, you can get into contact with us in a number of different ways. One of the best is to give us a call. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. If you don't want to do that, you can send us a good old-fashioned email. We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.